Our next speaker is Trafford Hall, who is the municipal manager for Kitimat, and he's been in this position for 12 years and has had a long history of being a municipal manager. He was assigned to the Alcan file by the mayor and council in 1994. First, this was to support Alcan's Kamano completion project, and then to secure the firm's right to produce power for aluminum production. But when Alcan started to sell power as a core business pursuit, Trafford Hall worked to reassert that Kamano Power is supposed to be dedicated to aluminum production and industry in BC, and that's what its whole contract was under initially and why it was given the power, and it has reneged on that.
I'm always pleased when people clap before I start to talk. Never sure whether you're going to be as happy when I finish. My background is I have an MBA from Queens and I have an honors degree in economics from Kingston. Okay, can't hear me? This one here? Which one's that? Oh, this one. Yeah, one of these work.
I think
okay.
This is it.
How's that?
Oh, that's a light.
Okay. That's a light. Great. I was asked by the Citizens for Public Power to talk about a struggle to have the vast resources of the Kamano and Nechaco watersheds continue to be used to support industry, jobs, and communities in northwestern British Columbia. Now, that struggle has gone on for 6 years. For those of us who are in it, it's epic. It's led by the mayor and council of the District of Kitimat, for whom I work. They're all very fine people. They're very conservative people. They're educated. And for the longest time, they were great supporters of this company, great advocates of it. And in fact, for the most part, I helped get the Liberals elected a few years back in northern British Columbia. I think of what is of interest to the people here tonight is that our issue in Kitimat is directly related to the profound changes in the British Columbia electric market, which is rapidly being thrust upon what I believe and what Dr. Calvert has said is an unwary and uninformed British Columbian public. I call this the debate that never happened. We had two people in the Legislative Assembly in opposition. They weren't able to carry this forward adequately. And this is a very significant public debate. And our press, frankly, let us down here. Now, I'm not predisposed to any particular ideology and have, for the most of my life, and I'm from Ontario originally, been a progressive conservative in my party support. Although I emphasize the progressive part, it was kind of a Joe Clark red Tory, I do have considerable faith in the market where it works, but I recognize it often doesn't work. And I understand the very need for the state involvement often when these markets fail to protect citizens and consumers. But whether you are center of the road, whether you're a socialist, a social reformer, or an ardent free enterpriser, we probably agree that great debate and great care should precede great shifts in public policy. And the electricity market changes upon us now is such a great shift. And yet, there has been no meaningful debate in my mind. There's no critical examination of the shortfalls of the current system, and Dr. Calvert said, it ain't broke. Why are we fixing it? And there's been no exploration of alternative models for delivering this essential electricity service to our province. No other models are forwarded here. If I say there is an ideological bent to this discussion, I would say it is an ideological bent which impairs us from examining closely a variety of alternative models. One of the alternatives is the one we had and that we're giving up. So why I've agreed to be here and what I hope this event accomplishes is the beginning of a real and vigorous debate on what will have and has already had on the citizens of Kitimat a very significant effect and on all of us. Now remember, the alternative model we choose, is not an end in itself. We're not here to support a model. We're here to support some success criteria. The model is a means to an end, and right now it's being promoted as an end itself. And I call this success criteria. And before we can define a problem or evaluate the alternatives, we must first agree upon what we're trying to achieve. Now, you might have noticed a saturation campaign by British Columbia Hydro, even at we in Kitimat. Full-page advertisements of the Sun, the province, continuously on global television. The criteria they're driving right now is self-sufficiency. Self-sufficiency. Even though we can buy it at $50, we're going to buy it at $87 because we want to be self-sufficient. If you agree that's a worthwhile thing, you might ask yourself, or you might note anyway, that the existing model, BC Hydro model, was a model of self-sufficiency. It was brilliant. There's a reason why the saturation advertising is happening, and I think it's a deflection. I think it's because the energy model that they're implementing is failing, and I think it's because the prices are coming in far, far higher than the government ever wanted them to. So, there's been a number of these success criteria foisted upon us, given to us. I think they're reasonable. Some of them, anyway. Price, we should have the cheapest power, reliable power. But there's a couple that have been lost in this BC Hydro's current saturation advertising campaign, and I say that accruing the maximum benefit for the natural resources used to the public owners of those resources, which is ourselves, our citizens, is an important success criteria. And the other one is the ongoing control of the very public water resources that we've relied upon. And of course, one that has also been lost and one that has been involved with the utility debate for 50 years, which is protecting consumers from monopoly rents. And we don't see much of that discussion of those success, and those are important success criteria. Now, you might at this point reflect that BC Hydro was constructed in 1962 by W.A.C. Bennett. It consistently delivered all of the above criteria for almost two generations, and still the government has fixated on pressing change, which I think is now being realized will not achieve any of those above criteria. And we are well along the way of abandoning a very successful model, and hence, of course, the saturation advertising. So I want to take a look, because for a couple of reasons, at monopoly rents and the capture of maximum value for public water resources, in part because they, I think, are the most important criteria in my mind, next to reliability and price. And I will explain why I think about that in a moment, but in part it also leads me to the Alcan-Kitimat issue. Now, one of the most important benefits of a market is that, through entrance to the production, the price of a good to the consumer will be driven down to reflect the cost of production. In other words, price affects cost. If there's a monopoly rent of any kind, entrance will come in and drive it down. But there's a lot of situations generally imposed by technological situations, scale economies particularly, that prevent this from happening. And this is what has been known as the natural monopoly, and most of you are familiar with that. I believe, in spite of what well-meaning persons may say to the contrary, regardless of how you structure this electricity market, price will never reflect cost over the long run, and monopoly rents will continue and even grow, particularly as capital is amortized, regardless of what model you choose, be it public ownership or private ownership. There will be substantial market rents in the energy sector, in this sector, for a variety of reasons. That was the reason W.A.C. Bennett and the progressive conservative governments in Ontario, why Tommy Douglas in Manitoba, why conservative governments in Quebec nationalized their energy program, or nationalized their state electricity grid. These were right-wing governments. They did it for business reasons, because monopoly rent in business is a bad thing, because you're trying to protect consumers. Now, monopoly rents shift money from the consumer to the producer, and they also provide a business opportunity, what I call supernormal profits. And And this is a prophet, my definition, but you'll find it elsewhere. It's in excess, a prophet in excess of that which is required to attract capital and enterprise in a market. It's over and above that which is necessary to continue the industry. And I say that these monopoly rents are in part explain the relentless and enthusiastic pursuit of these new energy policies now being thrust upon our province, and policies which move us away from most, if all, not all, the success criteria of reliability, security, and low cost that we normally pursue. And that's what I see. I see it's happening as individuals are simply pursuing a lucrative opportunity to capture the monopoly rents inherent in the electricity market. Now, whereas the full monopoly rent in a public utility accrues to the consumer because he or she is the owner of the enterprise. So who cares if you've got a monopoly rent? You paid $87 to BC Hydro, that would have made a windfall profit for the owner, and who's the owner? You guys. So it goes back to either reducing your taxes or paying for all the good things we buy through our governments. So the other answer is to effectively regulate the utility, but in BC, regulating agencies. What you might notice from Dr. Calvert's presentation, I'm not sure if you said it, John, but the regulatory agency right now is not regulating according to the cost of production. It's according to some market-driven price, what is coming forward. So you're going to see how these supernormal profits continue to shift well from the consumer to the producer. And when you see the Alcan issue, and I'm not going to go in great length in the Alcan issue, you'll see that. The other thing is the value of the resource. The maximum value of resources are normally captured in a market model in two ways. First, through the disposition and open tender of the asset. That's what you do in oil and gas. You go to the market and say, who wants it, how much? John just showed that that doesn't happen here. It's a fixed fee, first come, first serve. So one of the market mechanisms for value maximization is not there. I don't know why. The second thing is that the royalties should reflect market value of the end-use product. We balance our budget in British Columbia today because of $70 oil prices. And if we didn't raise our oil royalties when the price of oil went up, we wouldn't be able to do that. This huge monopoly rent would have flowed to the oil companies, most of whom don't live in British Columbia, or the owners don't. So for some reason, both of these mechanisms, long established in other industries, is not being used in the private power industry. I don't know why that is. To me, it's a great mistake. It's one that can easily be corrected, but exists, and I can only conclude it exists deliberately. And then you exacerbate the monopoly rents with this, of course, massive transfer of value on the value of the public resource. So let's just look at the Alcan and Chaco Camano project. 50 years ago, Alcan was given headwaters to a great river. And the Chaco River is one of the main tributaries of the Fraser. It flows from the eastern rim of the coastal mountains eastward to join the Fraser and then out in Vancouver. It joins the Fraser around Prince George. That headwaters of that particular resource was given to Alcan back in 1950, and it was given permanently. So any changes in the value of this resource in this transaction accrue don't get a chance to get renegotiated and reevaluated. It was given to build an aluminum industry and establish new centers of populations in the town of Camano and Kitimat, sprung out of nowhere. People moved based upon that promise, that contract. A dam was built on the Machaco, backing up a huge reservoir in the central plateau areas, just south of Houston and Vanderhoof. And then a 16-kilometer tunnel was drilled from the western end of that reservoir through the mountains to the sea. 16 kilometers of tunnel, dropping 1,100 feet. So this is a tremendous head on this hydroelectric dam. They just used mine technology, bored a tunnel, and then using mine technology, hollowed out a mountain and built a generator of about 896 megawatts, a huge generator, very, very efficient. Camano produces the world's cheapest power at well under $5. We use $5 just for our arithmetic. It's easy. The water power produced aluminum and could be sold to support other industries in the vicinity of the works. Basically, what it was is a model where captured power would be there, you'd have cheap electricity, and industry, therefore, would grow. It's a very successful model. aluminum is extremely profitable in British Columbia because of the cheap power. So, but essentially valuable resources are attained at highly preferential rates. And this is an important thing. Why? Because we got the value of that water through gainful employment and industry. About 1999, the firm changes hands. It amalgamates with another firm. The share concentration changes. Almost a complete sweep of management. And now they suddenly announce they're in two product lines. We're in aluminum and in power sales. So now the mayor and council is quite upset. But the town saw that if the firm could sell the Kamano power, the smelter would be charged the market value. Rather than $5 cost, it's going to be charged the market value. And it would then lose a decisive competitive advantage in an otherwise rapidly growing, high-wage, high-value industry. We'd be taking a wonderful industry, and we'd be going back to hewers of wood marketers of electricity now. Let's export. The mayor and council intervened. No serious discussions have ever taken place to resolve this issue, either with the company or the province. We've met, never a serious discussion. And eventually we went to court, trying to get a clear understanding of what the obligations are for the use of this water. And all the firm is doing is to testing the various agreements and to see if it can keep the preferential terms of these fabulous water resources and extricate themselves from the obligation to create jobs in British Columbia. It's a simple model. And by doing so, it captures this monopoly rent. Now, I had a couple of PowerPoint slides which I wasn't able to bring. Unfortunately, I had a technological glitch. But I'll just say this in a little bit of numbers I'll give you. They're selling electricity right now to British Columbia Hydro for $71 a megawatt. And they assert that they can sell all the power they want. They asserted this in court. And the government said it shouldn't have been called the Industrial Development Act. It should have been called the Hydro Development Act. That's what they said. We were floored. And they say both the government, after 50 years of governments of all political stripes, said this was water for aluminum, water for industry, water for British Columbia. Just like that, it changed. So they're making it at 5. They give the government 5 for the water license, and they sell it at 71. So they get a gross revenue of $66 and a cost of 5. That's 1,300% profit, zero risk, zero investment, not one new megawatt. And the government's saying, well, we're getting new electricity for the grid. No, you're not. You're turning out the lights in one town, in a British Columbian town, to turn them on in another. And the entire value of that river now, that whole supernormal profit, goes to the non-resident, non-Canadian for that part, which is largely an American or a European. That fantastic water resource, all the value just goes. So what's the value of the water resource? Give me 1 minute. So right now we're getting $5 a megawatt for the water, and Alcan's taking $60 of pure profit per megawatt hour. But let's say we charge the market value for the water. So what would market value be? Well, we're not communists. We want the company to make fair return on what it brings to the table. It brings its capital and its organizational skills. Let's give them 20%. You could double it. But 20%, the math is easy, and you can do it from there. 20% of $5 is a dollar. So they get a gross revenue of $6 on a $71 sale. Hope I'm not losing you here, guys. Sell it for $71. Give the company $6. They should be happy. It's 20%, twice what I'm getting in my RRSP. The rest, $65, is the value of the water. That $65 on the sales they're doing now, they're selling about 300 megawatts. That $65 is $170 million a year. And what we're getting is $13 million a year. $170 million a year and $300. Now, if they go all, the whole $800, triple it. $600 million, $550 million a year. That's super normal profits. That's profits over and above that which is necessary for the company to reinvest. That could buy a lot of hospitals, could solve a lot of social problems, could reduce your taxes if that's the way you're inclined. And that's what's happening in Kitimat. It is this relentless pursuit to capture the value of energy created by our water resources. My own belief, the British Columbians knew the value of this. story of Alcan is an example of how the vast wealth of BC rivers can slip away from British Columbians. Out of our province, with this irresistible temptation of monopoly rents. And this is a great wealth, an underappreciated wealth, and it's our heritage. And I think it would do much better use for the owners of that resource if it just stayed here. So thank you very much.